Okay, everyone, welcome to episode 18 of the Great Divide podcast. It's hard to believe. I say this every time that we do one of these, but it's amazing. We've got 18 episodes, and we've also got an incredible amount of downloads so far. And really, what's been, I guess, about a year since the show started, even though we pretty much celebrated a year, I think, when we did the Yuletide episode. I think the first episode actually came out sometime in June of last year. So we just wanted to share some news before we begin that we have got a lot more downloads, total downloads to report. And I'll let Svein give you the total number.
Yeah, because I crunched the numbers and you just lean back and say, interesting.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Yeah, we have plenty of downloads. I think John's site has had the most so far, but iTunes is quickly catching up. And right now they're roughly even. I think we have short of 13,000 on John's site and a bit over 11,000 on iTunes. So this week we actually passed 24,000 downloads, which is incredible.
Wow, that is really amazing. So yeah. Thanks you guys for listening and for all the feedback that we've gotten. We got a lot of great feedback from the last episode, which was preparing for the journey, and we kind of approached that episode as the occasion that it was, a time for us to reflect on a new Big Country album, because as we said the last time, we don't know how many more times we'll get to do that. Hopefully some more beyond this album. But now the journey is here. The journey has commenced. And the journey is here, the album is here, and I think most of us have had at least enough time to form some really strong opinions about it. And I know Svein and I have, because we've both had the album now for well over a month, and we've listened to it quite a bit. I think we've got enough listening time in where we can make a pretty accurate review that reflects our opinions on this album that will probably be lasting opinions.
Yeah, I think what would change my opinion is if I could actually get a freaking lyric sheet.
Yeah, so I know.
A lot of these songs are hard to discern. I mean, think of us foreigners who don't understand English. What are we going to do?
I know. Well, you know, there is a lyric sheet in the album. It's one sheet, and it just says river on it.
Yeah, that covers quite a bit. I think if you count the rivers on this album, you'll find almost one in every song.
My first listen to The Journey, I got it as a download. And I got to say, the first reaction I had, I was kind of surprised about, because it was this intense feeling of sadness and grief, in a way, that for the loss of Stuart. And I really felt like I was over that, to the point that I was ready to accept new music. I mean, obviously the death of Stuart really left a scar that will never go away in all of us, and certainly that way with me too. So I'm never going to say I am over Stuart's death, because I never will be over it. But I thought I at least was ready, after so many, the last few years of listening to Mike Peters fronting the band and even hearing them doing new songs, and accepting that and coming to terms with that and starting to listen to it in an objective way. I thought for sure that that would be the case when I turn on this album and start to listen to it, and I wouldn't be sort of haunted by the specter of Stuart. But it was not the case, at least for the first listen or so. And I want to stress that it didn't last that long, but it was still just like the sharp kick in the gut when I heard the very first notes of this album, because it just hit me. Wow, I'm about to listen to a Big Country album with zero Stuart Adamson anywhere. I'm not going to hear Stuart sing. I'm not going to hear any lyrics that Stuart wrote. I'm not going to hear any music that Stuart wrote. He certainly influenced the album, as we'll talk about, but he hasn't directly influenced the album at all. And that just really hit me a lot harder than I thought it would. And it really wasn't until about the second time through that I finally started to get over that. And I almost feel like that was like the last phase of real grief for what happened with Stuart. It was almost like that was the last thing I had to go through. Anyway, I just thought that was interesting. And once I got over that and started to listen to the album, I got to say, it just really, really surprised me, shocked me almost. I mean, as far as how much I liked it and how well I thought they did in establishing a new sound for the band while maintaining what they had in the past. I mean, we sort of talked about this in the last episode. We said what they needed to do was have a foot in the future and a foot in the past to some degree. And I think they accomplished that beautifully here. And I breathed just a huge sigh of relief after hearing this album and really starting to understand it, because it's not like I thought it was going to be a bad album, and it's not like I was worried that it was going to be bad, but there were some concerns that I had and I didn't know exactly what to expect. But man, if they didn't win me over with this, they just completely won me over. I think it's a great album. It's something that I'll be listening to forever. And if you award MVPs, most valuable player awards for people on an album, I would have to give it to Mark, although I think everybody really steps up their game on this record. But Mark's drumming is like nothing I've heard from him since the Steel Town album. Quality wise, I think it sits right up there with the same type of quality that the band had been known for before. And like my favorite Big Country albums, it's a headphones album. When you listen to it in headphones, you hear so many little intricate things going on. I was amazed by that. And I think what it really shows is that people can say that Big Country was Stuart Adamson, and he was certainly the focus and the focal point and the genius of the band, and rightly so. But clearly, I think this album proves that there was a lot of other stuff going on too, and a lot of other people that were contributing to the sound, because a lot of that is still here.
Yeah, I think you said one thing that definitely I recognize, and I see a lot of people having the same experience, which is relief. And I think a lot of people wanted to like the album and really wanted to. And I think there was a concern that they wanted to like it more than they would like it. And I definitely come from that thing, that it's a new start. It's a new beginning. You wipe the slate clean and you have no idea where it's going to end up. It's not going to be a follow-up to anything. It's really a continuation on a different level. And can they live up to this? Can they live up to that? You know, even though you don't want to compare it with anything, but it's unavoidable. You know, as long as you're going to go out this Big Country, you sign up basically for a certain thing. You sign up for a certain element. If you go out as a new band, really you have a license to do anything you want to. But if you go out as Big Country, you expect something. And I guess that something was what had people concerned. That would that something be there? Or would it be like before, or surpass what was before, or at least be comparable on some level? So I don't even remember taking it in the first time. I was just sitting there and in a trance. I was sitting at home, just playing the album. I was in the living room and just taking it in. And I just listened to a couple of songs and I knew this feels right. Right away, this feels right. And already the first song, you know, when the Broken Promise Land came on, and right, yes, this feels right. You know, if the rest of the album suck, this song kind of is something already. It's already something of value. And you set yourself up for if the rest suck. But you go song after song after song into the album and you say, okay, now I got enough to be happy. And even if the rest suck, now I got 3, 4, 5 songs. So you sort of grow your comfort zone as you go through the album. And I guess that's a good sign. And by the time I was through it, I said, okay, I'm totally on board with this. I have no concerns. And I feel relief. It's exactly what I hoped it would be, what I didn't dare hope for, which is really the thing. No one dared to hope for this.
Right.
We had some songs on YouTube. Some songs that were played live years before. I think the album surpassed what those blueprints were, those early sketches, those live things. I think they have surpassed themselves for the most part. And in some cases where I was concerned about what I heard on YouTube, I was much relieved with the final result. It really lives up to the name. A lot of songs where I felt the Big Country signature wasn't that strong, I feel it more on the album. And I definitely feel a Big Country signature. So yes, the album very clearly exceeds expectations, and not especially in terms of being a good collection of songs, but especially in terms of being a Big Country album. That was really what I was concerned about. I knew there would be good songs, and the guys involved in this band, they make good music. I would be happy with the music, but would it be a big country album? So that was always a big question in my book. And so would it be a big country album? And would it be a good one? So by going out as that name, there are certain obligations and musical legacy and what have you that you should live up to. And so it could be a good album and still not a big country album. But yeah, we'll save the main summary for after our dissection. But yes, it is a good big country album. They've made me proud, I think, is the main thing. And more importantly, they made me happy. So I smile when I listen to this thing.
Yep, I do too. Okay, so why don't we just start talking about the album then, track by track, and we will start with the review from one of you guys through our SpeakPipe page. And fittingly, this comes from a true Scotsman. Shot!
Hello, this is Kenny Henderson from Glasgow, Scotland. I'm here to talk about the new big country album, but firstly I want to make sure you have the pronunciation right of the album title. Being a Scottish band, it's essential that you call it The Journey. I know you guys will give the accent your best shot. I've got to say, the album completely surprised me. I wasn't expecting great things at all, but I'm delighted to be able to say to the band, sorry I doubted you, you proved me wrong, and you did yourself, Sam Stewart, proud. The album sounds fantastic. Who needs a big name producer when you can make an album sound that good by yourself? It's full of great guitar sounds, full of great melodies, and of course the drumming is amazing. In fact, I think this album could well be Mark Brzezicki's finest moment. I've left a full album review on the Facebook page, so I won't go into the individual tracks here. I just want to add one thing, which is about the track In a Broken Promised Land. I think it needs more cowbell. I'd love to hear what you guys have to say about the album, and thanks again for a great podcast.
That was an awesome message, Kenny. Thank you. You will get the ball rolling as we begin to discuss this album track by track, and we're gonna try to do what you suggest. So as we get ready to talk about the journey.
Good that? God, you don't have to add the pathos.
I feel like I have to, and I'm really doing a Shrek impersonation. I'm impersonating Shrek impersonating a Scottish person. So that's the only way I can do it.
The journey. The journey.
But it started over.
In a Broken Promised Land is the first song on the big country album The Journey, and it really illustrates the landscape of big country. Everything that's happened to it over 30 years is kind of summed up in that one song. There's lyrical references back to the past, but it also points to the future, and the big country's had to endure a lot to get this far, and In a Broken Promised Land is the opening song of the album and sets the scene musically and lyrically for everything that follows on the journey.
In a Broken Promised Land kind of originated from a little demo that Jamie and I did on a little Porter studio up in Dunfermline. A little drum machine, a couple of guitars, and modern technology. I thought, I'll ping this down to Mike, you know, MP3 it. Mike, he gets it, he does his bit, MP3s it back to me. And we did the very same, sent it over to Derek and stuff like that, you know, and it's a great way of working. It's a new way of working for a big country, but it's modern technology.
Yeah, it was great when the demo arrived. I wasn't sure it was coming, and I can't remember what it was called. It was just track one.
Yeah.
And I just started playing it, and the idea of the first line, the past is a foreign country, just came to me, because that's sort of where we've had to come from. It is a foreign country, big country. The history of the band is quite far and widespread and in the past, and to bring that all forward into the future, there was a lot of things that needed to be addressing, and they began with that song, really, the idea of the past meets the future, and sort of the idea of bringing everything together lyrically, unifying everything, solidifying everything, because you have to have that base to go forward.
Okay, so Broken Promised Land, the opening of this album, and what an opening it is. I think this is one of the best opening songs that we've had on a big country album in a long time. I'll just come right out and say it now. This is my favorite song on the album. I think it should have been the single. I think it it would have been a better way to reintroduce the band to the public than the song Hurt. It's got so many trademarks of classic Big Country, but obviously the main thing that's different here is Mike's voice, which is a huge difference. But I think this song really does a great job in what we talked about before. It does a great job of bridging the present and the future with the past. And man, when you hear the opening riff of this song, which, by the way, reminds me a little bit of Return to the Two-Headed King. Very fitting that the album starts out with what I assume is Bruce playing the guitar. Could be Jamie, who knows, but it's a great Big Country riff, great way to start out. And then the very next thing you get hit by is what's going to be a common motif throughout this album, and that's this incredible drum part from Mark. And I think when I first heard those drums, I just thought, wow. The lyrics to the song are really strong. It starts out with what I consider a great line. The past is a foreign country. I think that's just a really good line and a good way to start this new, I'm gonna say it, this new journey. It's a really great way to say it. It's a perfect
journey.
Yeah, the journey. The journey. It's a great way to start the song out. And another great line, I think, in the chorus is, "Roses and ashes lie where your shadow falls." I think that's a beautiful, beautiful line by Mike. Really good. And clearly this song is about Stewart, or at least, you know, certainly influenced by Stewart and what's happened, and references him directly in both that line about roses and ashes lie, and also in a line that says, "All that you had to give, you gave for us all." Clearly that's referencing Stewart too. And I get a little choked up when I hear that and when I heard it the first time. But musically, I think, is just where this song really shines and offers this incredible declaration, if you'll pardon the pun, of what this album is going to be. I mean, you can really hear the sound of guys who are really, really hungry, I think, on this song. And there's just a sparkling energy to the song. It's electric. It's got an incredible amount of power to it musically. And what I really like about it is the musicality is really there, but it doesn't sound or feel studied. It feels like the band could just completely let loose at any second. It's just like barely contained chaos, I guess, if that makes any sense. It's just a powerhouse of a song. Just a couple things that really stand out to me, a couple portions of the song besides those lyrical elements that I mentioned and the guitar playing in general. There's some really cool guitar playing during the verses, and I wish I could better explain what I mean by cool guitar playing, but there's just this pattern playing during the verses that I think is really inventive and very, very cool. Really interesting from a musical perspective. If you don't know what I'm talking about, just go back and listen to it and listen to what's being played during the verses of the song. And it's just a really cool little part, because Bruce or whoever's playing that could have easily just played a bar chord there or a muted chord and kind of a chugga 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 type of thing. But they're playing this really cool little rhythmic part that adds a whole lot to the feel of that song, in my opinion. I think the guitar solo by Bruce is great, and I'm assuming that's Bruce because I've seen a video of them playing this live, and he plays this solo live. And the best thing about this solo is actually not the guitar, though. It's during the solo section, Mark does this incredible pattern on what I think is a China cymbal or a crash cymbal. I'm not completely 100% sure of the technical term for the cymbal that he's playing, but he just does these crashes on the cymbal there, this pattern that is just so freaking powerful and cool. It's just absolutely awesome. This is going to be a very boring song description, because I honestly have zero criticisms of this song. Love the melody, love the music, love the production, and just when you think it's over, they give you that little bit of extra that's kind of like the icing on the cake, which is this little lead line that I've since learned was played by Jamie. And it's the stereotypical great big country line. In fact, it really reminds me of the solo part that Stewart used to play live in Fields of Fire. I just think this is a great song. It's a great way to start the album. It's a great way to set the tone. And it really hits you immediately. And this is something that we should talk about a little bit, too, as we go through this, that we didn't really get to yet, is the production of this album.
Right.
It was produced by Big Country, but a woman named Andrea Wright was the engineer and, I believe, the one who mixed the album. And I have to give a lot of credit to her and to them, because I know they were originally talking about having Bill Nelson produce this and maybe some other people. And even when Bruce spoke with us, he mentioned Rafe McKenna as possibly mixing or mastering the album, the guy who had done Driving to Damascus. But he's not in any of the credits, so obviously he had nothing to do with it. And Bill Nelson apparently did not either. So they chose to do it themselves. And, man, I think they did an awesome, awesome job. I have a couple of nitpicks about it that I'll get to in other songs. But, boy, what a great production and great mix. And this song, I think, is one of the strongest big country songs, period, that we've had in a long time. And I'm just thrilled with it.
Yeah, I mean, speaking about the kind of production that's about giving the material direction, they definitely are showing that they can do this themselves. They clearly know what they want. Like most bands do when they've been around for a while. A lot of bands produce themselves at the when they reach their 30th anniversary. They know what they want more than a new producer do. So when it comes to the more technical aspects of production, including working on sound and possibly engineering it, obviously I'd like to have the CD and listen to an uncompressed album. So I'm not going to comment too much. Sometimes it feels a little rough around the edges. I'm not sure if it's aimed at rather than because of mistakes. It doesn't feel like a mistake. It could be part of the sound. It's certainly not jarring or distract from the sound. But I think as long as, you know, giving the material direction is the biggest thing. And this song clearly hits home there. I mean, what a song to come back with. And it's the perfect song to start the album. And yes, you're right. You know, there can be no mistake. The opening riff is returned to the two-handed thing. And it's about time that riff gets a proper showing. Really, it's a killer riff, and it's played a bit different, and like a lot of ingredients in this song and on this album, it just sounds very playful. Like that middle guitar part you referenced, it's very playful.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, they're trying out and they're being playful, and it's, yeah, you like that? What about this thing? And yeah, how about this? And there never is sort of an A4 or very few instances. There's a couple, but for the most part, this album is really playful and try different things and different instrumentations. And I think I saw somewhere that even Derek plays guitar, so you have at least three, potentially four, if Mike plays guitar players on this album, and that's insane. So anyone can play anything, and anything goes. And I think that shows in the music. There's a playfulness, and it's also shown in what I think. The crediting of the album. I think every song is credited to every member of the band. In other words, you sort of stop the who wrote what kind of thing, that some bands have very distinct songwriting and maybe it becomes more a political issue. Where here, that isn't the case. You know, anyone can bring an idea, they try it out and they incorporate and mix things up. And from a fan perspective, I'm kind of one of those guys who would like to know who wrote what. I'm really interested in that, and who wrote what, and who did what bit, and who played what part. So there's part of me that I want to have that information. Come on, give it to me. But having it be more about the band, I think, has helped the music on this album, and it shows. It's playful, and I'm never sure who's played what. And the fact that you have four potential guitar players for any one bit in this on this album is incredible. It's definitely something that it shows in the music. You know, anything's possible. So setting the standard right from the start and having a song that is both upbeat and up-tempo is very clever. And it's the guitar hooks that grab you right away. It's not just a catchy opening riff, but they make room for the breakout guitar lines in the verses. I mean, Mike comes in, sings a couple lines, and they have a breakout guitar line. Beautiful melodic line. How smart isn't that? They really rope me in with that. They leave breadcrumbs and we just follow them. And they keep throwing bits like that in all the time. And that's freaking amazing. It's such a playful song, such a very melodic and strong song. And it brings back the Celtic. Driving to Damascus.
Really does.
Yeah, Driving to Damascus took away the Celtic. And here we get it back. So I'm really, really thrilled about that. And once the song gets underway and you're taken into the initial sonic attack, the true star of the proceedings come to the fore, which is Mark. He simply is unbelievable on this song and on this album. Mm-hmm. And as good as everybody are, I have to say that for me, this is Mark's album. He is just incredible. He's always been very technical, playing incredible stuff on hi-hats and very intricate patterns. But I have to admit, sometimes I say, come on, Mark, bash a bit more. Come on. I know you can play the technical stuff. You know, do it. Hit, you know, come on. And of course, he missed the opportunity to do that on the Buffalo Skinners. He wasn't there, which was the album.
But now we know that he could have.
Yeah, we now apparently, and obviously we see the live songs he played on and did a damn fine job. But at long last, he gets to be let loose on an actual Big Country studio album. So I'm very happy about that. And like yourself, the song should have been the single. It's super catchy. It would stand out on radio. It sounds like the band. I think the band should be proud of their sound. I think they should flaunt it, to be honest.
Yeah, I do
so,
too.
So we're going to get to Hurt eventually, but that may be the one song that tones down the Big Country style the most. It sounds like it could be a number of bands, but this definitely is a flagship song. It's very positive, and it takes you in. And the way they sprinkle interesting stuff in, I think it would have stood up. So it's definitely one of my favorites. You already said it's your favorite. For me, it's number two.
Number two for you? Okay, number one for me.
Yeah, I love it.
This is the very first time in the album that Mike uses the word river, and it works great here. And I do think he uses it too much, however, throughout the rest of the album. And we'll get to that. I think one of the things with Mike, and I think with all the stuff that he does and has going on, I just don't think there's any way that he can sit and craft lyrics to songs the way Stewart probably did when he wrote for Big Country. I mean, I got the feeling that Stewart probably took the music and then he took it somewhere and he sat with it for a long period of time and wrote and crafted his lyrics. And Mike's just obviously more of a stream of consciousness guy. And some of the stuff you get from that is really good. And some of the stuff you get from that can be very cliched, I think, at least in my opinion. But I think the thing that it's got that wins me over overall, even though I do wish some more care had been given to some of the lyrics, but what really wins me over is the delivery. And I think this song is a great example of his singing, which I think is fantastic on this album. I'm nowhere near the fan that you are as far as having the material, so I can't judge it and rank it accurately with what everything he's done. But just going on what I've listened to and heard, this has to be one of his best vocal performances ever, I think, at least from my knowledge of The Alarm and what little I've heard of him solo. I just am really impressed by his singing on this, and there is even a line in Broken Promised Land where he really just lets loose and holds the note toward the end as Mark does this incredible drum roll. It's a great moment, and it's really, again, another kind of declaration of what this new Big Country is going to be like. And it's great singing on this. Great singing.
Mike does sing greatly. He has a strong voice. It is, of course, like a muscle. The more you use it, the stronger it gets. And he always uses it. I don't think he's ever let down.
Yeah.
But on the topic of Mike's lyrics, since we're touching on this, and I know we're going a bit back and forth with this, but I looked a bit at differences in approach between Mike and Stewart. And if you look at some very classic examples from both of them, from these were written in the same year. And you have Stewart typically writing stuff like, "Maps on the back of your hands point to the cross. scratches on a wall in a room draws out your loss. It's pretty interesting stuff. It certainly isn't spur of the moment. This is well thought out and very poetic. Right. And in the same year, you have a lyric from Mike where he comes from a different angle. And this is from Blaze of Glory. It's funny how they shoot you down when your hands are held up high and you open up your heart and soul, but that's not enough for most. It comes from a totally different place. It's much more emotional, much more I'm bearing it all for you to see. And maybe it is more less thought out, less poured over. I think Stuart, I just imagine him in his study with his quill thinking.
Yes, exactly.
Whereas Mike is out there and retching open his chest so you can look at his heart and he pours it out for you. So yeah. It's a totally different approach, right? And I'm not I get what you're saying about it seems like stream of consciousness, and maybe it is, maybe it isn't, maybe that's what he comes up with, maybe that's the style he just has to offer. And I think in terms of cliche, I mean, I've been reading a lot of comments online that Mike's lyrics, you know, he veers into the cliche too often. And I see what they mean. But after having read it plenty of times, I feel the biggest cliche of them all is that statement that Mike veers into the cliche. it's kind of like, and I'm going to use a cheesy example, but please bear with me. If you look at the phrase, I love you, it's the most cliched phrase of all. But we don't stop using it. And it's all in context and delivery. And I know you mentioned this already. Like if you're in a beautiful location, and you have a rose or whatever classic setup you have, and you tell your partner, I love you, and the moment is right, and you look into the eyes, and then you have the delivery, and the line means something. And that's exactly what Mike does to his songs. It's the context and the delivery. So, yes, I totally see the cliche argument about Mike. But then you have the way he sings it. I mean, Mike's lyrics are not the ones that should be just read on a lyric sheet and taken as they are there. They should be really experienced, and you should feel the way he delivers it. And some comments were made that, you know, that's the reason there's no lyric sheet in this album. There's a reason why there isn't one. And on one level, it's a bit of a fun comment, but on another level, I feel a lot of people genuinely believe that's why. so I don't know how I feel about that, but definitely there's this is a change for Big Country fans, and it's a change that, you know, this is Mike, this is what he brings, this is the style he brings. So yeah. So instead of having maps on the back of your hands that point to the cross, we'll have the opening of heart and soul. and those type of lyrics. So that's part of the package, and I totally get that this veers into the cliche, but I don't know. Yes and no. I don't buy it as readily as a lot of people do. And part of me is tired of hearing that comment, but I do know where it's coming from.
Yeah, I do too, and I think that's an interesting way that you put it when you talk about the way I love you can be used. That's very good. I can see that with a lot of some of the lines Mike uses, but there are lines where I think he just, and we'll get to them in other songs, where I feel like when I say stream of consciousness, I don't necessarily mean that he didn't give it any thought or any legitimate thought, but I think with any writer, there are just certain themes that you just naturally go to. As a writer, you get a habit of going to this lyric or this kind of line or whatever. Mm-hmm. And some people are able to look at that and say, you know what, I write this too much. I'm going to force myself to come up with something else. Some people just say, hey, that's what I came up with. That's what I came up with. Some people might just say, I don't have time to finish writing this song. sometimes that's the feeling that I get from some of these lines. But, more so in some other songs, but it's a rarity in this album. I really do think that he's got some really, and I think that's why I bring it up more, because I really do think he's capable and has shown even in this album that he's capable of writing some really beautiful lines. And a part of me wishes he would go back to that sitting in a room with a quill, because I'm confident that he could come up with some really great stuff. But then again, that's not him, and he's got to be true to himself. And, that to me doesn't necessarily give him carte blanche to just write anything he wants, because I do think there are some moments where he could be called to task for some weaker lines. But I, as a guy, as I've said this many times, as a guy, he just has totally won me over with his personality, with the way he lives his life, with his outlook on life. And you're going from a guy with Stewart who clearly had a dark side, and that dark side is really what I think attracted a lot of us to the music, and to the lyrics especially. And everybody has a dark side. I'm sure Mike does as well, but nowhere near does he have it, it seems, the way Stewart did. I mean, Mike really seems to have preserved that same outlook that he had when he began, and maybe even he may even have it more now than he did then, based on what he's gone through. And I think that also needs to always be looked at, what he's gone through personally with his battles with his illness, because sometimes I would imagine that if you've looked death in the face more than once, maybe those big sweeping themes mean more to you than they would to someone who hasn't had that experience and who's sitting there saying, come on, wow me with some great literary moments here. Maybe those big themes of rivers and hurricanes and the things he uses so much, maybe they mean more to him because of what he's gone through. I don't know.
Yeah, definitely. And I don't know if everybody's aware of this, but he's not just a cancer survivor once. He's a survivor twice.
Right.
And that is incredible. And he still is living with a condition that it could come back. And
He has to get it checked all the time, right?
Yeah, he has to get it checked. And he still manages to be the positive Mike that everyone looks to for inspiration. Yeah. How strange is that?
Hey guys, it's Rob, sharing a few thoughts about The Journey. This is just an incredible album. You know, I heard the clips on iTunes and I knew that it was going to be strong, but I was not prepared for it to be even half as good as it is. There's not a weak track on the album. You know, from In a Broken Promised Land to Hail and Farewell, it's an album that could easily stand alongside any of the past catalog. You know, Bruce and Jamie effortlessly play off of each other's strengths in a way that we haven't heard in a long time. And Mike's vocals and his lyrics manage to sound more like an evolution to the sound of Big Country and less like, oh, I'm just trying to be Stuart Adamson. Derek Forbes, to me, adds a fresh, kind of a grimy groove to the songs. And, you know, he manages to bring something to the table. Some spark of creativity that, again, I feel had been missing for a little while. But if I have to say this is anyone's album, it's got to be Mark Brzezicki's, because, man alive, he lit it up from the opening track to the end. I mean, if everyone's playing at 110%, Mark's got to be playing at 116, because it's just absolutely blowing me away. Again, I can't say enough good things about the way this turned out. It could have so easily not turned out well. It could have so easily been uninspired and hackneyed and trying too hard to sound like they used to. And to me, this sounds 100% fresh, and it sounds like they have their own identity back. You know, I'm kind of speechless. I've recorded this thing about 1,000 times, and each time I keep freezing up with trying to find the right words, and so I'm just not even going to try. It's that good. Thanks. See ya. Bye.
The Journey was a song that we wrote in the rehearsals when Tony Butler was still being part of the band, and Tony made a contribution to this particular song, and again it happened very organically. It started with a guitar part from Bruce, a kind of rhythm section, and then it just grew up from there. And the lyrics really came from the conversation we had actually in the rehearsal room, and I think Mark might have said to me something along the lines of, it feels like we're going on a journey with this song, and it was the first time someone had actually mentioned the phrase the journey. And as the lyricist, I sort of leapt on that and thought, well, this is really, sometimes you've got to make the journey. We have to make that leap of faith. We have to cross that line to embrace what is happening now. We've crossed that line, and this is a song that lyrically encourages everybody to cross that line, and it acknowledges that yes, it's going to be a tough journey. There will be pain, there'll be joy, there'll be tears, everything associated in life comes into making this particular journey, and this is the signature title track from the song because of that reason.
No, with the journey, you know, like all big country songs, it came from within the band, and as Mike said, you know, lyrical ideas pop up instantly with Mike, and he gets ideas and he throws those lyrical ideas at the band as well. You know, he'll take me outside and say, I've got this great line, you know, what do you think? This is my feeling for the song. And you know, when we're cutting the demos and stuff, I'm taking those words on board, and it you know, you're painting this whole picture again, in how it's always evolving. And you know, it's coming from a great guitar riff, and then, you know, Mike may say, well, let's go to this section now, you know, because I'm going to speak about this. And, you know, everything's being kind of, Mike's kind of leading the charge in that sense with the lyrical ideas, with the music. And it does really help kickstart the song and move the song forward. You know,
can start to see it a little bit clearer. We would literally go outside the room and I'd have some words that are just, they just literally come to me while I was hearing their music. You know, you often think, where does a song come from? Is it from here? Is it from a higher place, and it's passed down to you? So I felt that we needed to really get as many of these words that the music was throwing up into the space down as fast as we could, and we'd sit outside with pens and paper.
Yeah, we had a tea break, but you had your iPhone, you're going, look, we were banging these words, you know, and I think this is going to work really great. And when you do this section here, if I can throw out that, it's going to send the chorus in to, you know, elevate this, and it will really strengthen the meaning of my words, you know.
We were again painting pictures with what we were doing and joining all forces together. And you know, there's an element of, there was an element we felt like Stuart was present at times because we were working in ways, and Mark would say, well, this is uncanny. It's like,
yeah,
I'm sat here when we're working something out with Stuart.
Yeah,
when my father died, you know, the vicar came to the house and he said, look, your father hasn't gone. He's just in the next room and you can't see him.
Yeah.
And I felt that's how we were working in Big Country. I just felt like Stuart was in the other room and we couldn't see him. But his presence is there all the time because we're continuing lines of work that began with his inspirations and that was shaped by the band, and they belong to the family now.
I think the fact that, you know, of a similar age and we grew up in the same time period, and, you know, we both embraced music in a similar style from, you had the Alarm, Big Country, U2, Simple Minds, we talked about that family. Mike and Big Country have always been in harmony, and it was no huge big change, and it's not taking anything away from Stuart, but from a writing point of view, it wasn't a big change for me. Because I'm hearing it organically, and I'm Mike, along with other songwriters of that ilk and that period, working that way. You know, you could call it old school, I call it our family, in the way we work. And Mike instantly was the man, you know, doing what I would normally expect. And things just felt right. It's the chemistry thing again.
Yeah, I think we, you know, we had such an intimacy about us when we were working straight away that I felt I could open to them and talk to them about lyrics. I thought maybe we're touching the nerve too deeply here, and we're sticking the pen in the heart, and there's too much blood being spilled. But we felt from the communal conversations we'd have as friends sat around the table when we were making this music that we needed to confront everything. The one thing I was felt strongly about with this record, we mustn't leave anything behind. We've got everything we want to say has got to come out now. We might not get a second chance. It all has to come right now, and we mustn't be afraid to open ourselves up and not leave those words behind that we were too afraid to say.
The Journey. Yes, this is, of course, one of the songs that the band have been playing live for a while, so we've had a while to get familiar with it. And I wasn't too super keen about the early YouTube clips. I guess I, at the time, listened for Big Country hooks that I didn't quite see. But the studio version has made me much relieved. This is certainly the best version that we heard so far, as it should be. And it's clearly grown into a band song and a Big Country song. And this is, you know, as the title track, a song that has some importance, and it's a mission statement song. And I don't really mind mission statement songs, but there's a balance to be struck there that sometimes can be hard to get right. I think there's only two ways of doing it. Either with a glint in the eye, go for the fun factor, or let it be a serious statement of intent. And this is definitely a more serious, or at least earnest, type of statement. Like, don't be afraid to come with me to the journey, and there will be pain, there will be fun, and but it'll be all right, just come with me. And that's pretty much all the lyrics are about. Don't be afraid to make this journey here with me. There's no disgrace, no guilt or shame. We don't go into the dark stuff like Stuart's not with us anymore, or all that stuff, and so many years have gone by. It's just, now we're here. This is it. Journey starts here. You want to come with me? You know, don't be afraid. It will be fun. And I like that earnestness. And I've used the term big company earnestness before, and the song has that. It has some of that. But in terms of mission statement, I'm going to use a really cheesy example of something else. I like a lot of music, and I'm going to use an example from the realm of heavy metal. Few styles of music are as flag-carrying as metal, and a lot of songs are a celebration of that style of music, and on some level they fall into the same kind of mission statement that songs like The Journey is. And one of the many bands I like is Manowar, the self-proclaimed kings of heavy metal. And they have at least one song on each and every album they've ever released about themselves and about how they are either the kings of metal, about their fight for true metal, death to false metal. They are the metal warriors, and I just think it's hilarious stuff. I mean, they're definitely going for the more fun aspect of mission statements, right? Almost self-parodying celebration of what they are. So when I hear songs like The Journey, I'm thinking this is Big Country's own little version of those kind of songs. It's about themselves. It's about what they're doing, and obviously, it's not as abashedly over-the-top cheesy, or coming from the fun side. This is on Big Country's own terms. It's kind of serious, especially given the circumstances that brought Mike into the band. The song is what it needs to be, but it's the same kind of thing. So I look at it from that angle, and that's an interesting angle to look at it from. Performance-wise, the song is great. The highlight of the song to me is Mark at the end of the song. He's giving us some really sweet double bass drum action. It's power metal. Oh, way to go, Mark. Power metal. Gorgeous. The song is fine. It's not my favorite song on the album, but it gets a lot of brownie points for a very endearing subject matter and passionate delivery, especially all around. I don't know if it's because I lived with it much, much longer than most of the other songs, and they are thus fresher right now. So there again, we have the early aspect.
And that's, again, one of these prices that you pay in the digital age when you have such access to these songs.
Yeah, because, no doubt.
Yeah, because, I mean, this was one of the first songs that I heard them do live on a live bootleg, one of the first new songs. And then they eventually released a fully produced version of this. I think the record company did, or somebody did. It was played on Derek Forbes' radio show, and they released this well before the album came out, so everybody listened to it, and I listened to it quite a bit. So I always liked it, but by the time the album came out, I was just kind of like, I kind of want to skip this and just go into something I haven't heard, but I listened to it. And I'll be honest with you, I kind of get that feeling every time this song pops up. I think I'm going to skip this one for now. But but the funny thing is that I always end up listening to the whole thing anyway. And I actually think when you were talking about it being they could take like a glint in the eye approach or a serious approach, I kind of see it more as a – I mean, there's definitely a lot of serious themes here. Don't get me wrong. But I see a little bit more leaning toward that glint in the eye theme as it gets toward the end of the song. It just kind of has that really uplifting feel. And what really puts that over the top for me is when Bruce Watson himself sings at the end of the song, which I love. And I gotta give John Gouvea credit for letting me know that that was Bruce, because I'll be honest with you, when I first heard the song, I didn't think of it as Bruce. It didn't jump out and hit me as him. I just thought it was Mike overdubbing himself singing over himself or something, and it didn't hit me right away. But then John said, you know, that's Bruce singing sometimes at the end, don't you? And I said, no. And I went back and listened, and I thought, how could I have missed that? It's clearly Bruce. I've got to say, I love Bruce's voice. And one thing that I'm disappointed about on the CD, on the liner notes, is that everybody is credited with backing vocals except for Bruce Watson. It's like, come on, Bruce. I told him this when we interviewed him. I legitimately love his voice. It's definitely not a Mike Peters technical voice that he's going to have a great octave, multi-octave range type of thing. But there's something very endearing to his voice for me, and it's got a very Joe Strummer-esque quality. And The Clash is my second favorite band of all time. I love The Clash. I love Joe Strummer, and it's not that I love Bruce's voice because he sounds like Joe Strummer, but he just conjures those emotions in me. It's got a similar type of tough, gritty voice, and I would love it if he would be allowed to sing or be able to sing one song on the next album. I love his voice, and I think it has a really interesting sound to it, and it can give a song kind of a certain grit that helps it along. And I think he does that on this song. And when I hear him singing the backups there at the end, with I'm assuming the other guys are singing too, and then Mike, it just warms my heart. It really does, and it's a great moment, I think, for Bruce. It kind of symbolizes what the band has been through, I think, to get to this point and to make such a damn good album. And it's like a triumphant moment. And I think when he's singing that line, I could just be reading into it, but I just get that feeling of triumph coming from him. And from, I mean, you always feel the feeling of triumph coming from Mike, but when you hear that one line from Bruce, I get that from him too. And it just touches me. I think it's really a great moment in the album. And it really elevates that song to me even further. The one other part of the song that we didn't mention that I really like is the middle section. And it's kind of the breakdown with the cool little guitar parts. And we get the first real harmonizing, I don't want to call them bagpipe guitars here, because they're really just harmonizing guitars in the big country tradition. But I love that little midsection. It always reminded me a little bit of Harvest Home. I don't know why, but it's got kind of a feeling of the midsection of Harvest Home to me for some reason, and it evokes the past there in a nice way. But I think the lyrics are very fitting for the message they're trying to get across. It's a great theme song. It's a great title track. This is one line, one portion where I'm not totally thrilled with the chorus lyrically, when it's like lines like "there is a land, there is a sea, there is a place where we can be." It's okay. That's an okay line, but it doesn't quite capture the rest of the song quite as much. But then there are other great lines that are very touching that we've got. There will be hurt, there will be pain. What we have left cannot be destroyed. I mean, a very simple line, a very in-your-face, upfront line. It's not like that's necessarily a poetic line, but knowing that everything that the band has been through and what the fans have been through, that's a nice line, I think, and gives me a good feeling. So it's a good song, a good solid song, very good 1-2 punch to open the album. And where do you rank this in your list?
I have it at number 10.
It's where I have it, number 10.
Of course.
Hey Thomas, it's fine. This is Mark Cole from Devon in Southwest UK. Just leaving you a quick message. I've been meaning to do this for a few days now, but just haven't had time. So it's basically on my thoughts on the new album for Big Country, The Journey, which on the whole I think is brilliant. I'm trying not to get swept along in the euphoria of the band just being together and all the positive feelings there are at the moment. I purposely didn't listen to any of the YouTube clips of the new songs. I didn't go on iTunes. I didn't want to hear anything of the new album. It's been a long time tradition of mine to listen to an album for the first time. Sat down and reading the lyrics, but unfortunately the one negative thing with the new album, no lyrics. But some might say there's a reason for that, but not for me. I think Mike's done a pretty decent job on the album. I mean, Stuart was a poet, so there's always going to be this comparison. But on a whole, I think the album's fantastic. I really didn't think it would be as good as it is in that Another Country. The single really left me cold, didn't do anything for me, from the production to the drum sound to the song as a whole. But the biggest compliment I can pay the album and this new group of songs is that Another Country is one of the best sounding songs on there now. I think what they've done to it, I think, just has put it head and shoulders above the first version. I just think that there's a warmth to it. I think there's obviously a lot of love for the record, and there's some fantastic music on there, and I think Bruce and Jamie sound incredible. Mark, well, there's been one constant for me from the very first time I heard Big Country. Even on a bad Big Country song, the drumming is usually incredible, and well, he's on another planet with this, and I can't wait to see him do this live. Favourites for me, well, it'd be easy to say the songs that I don't like, but Return, I just can't get enough of. It puts a smile on my face every time I hear it. Another Country, like I say, is fantastic. Angels and Promises, it just is an incredible piece of music. Heart, obviously. I'm just going to name all the songs, basically. Anyway, I'm getting under 3 minutes, so it's just wanted to say thank you for the podcast. It's kind of helped renew my interest in the band, and so thank you guys, and thank you, Big Country. Mark Cole from the UK signing out from the pipe. See you later, guys.
After the Flood, this is the first track ever to feature a fretless bass, because I was told the remit was that it sounded a bit, they've got a song that sounds like, a bit like Simple Minds. And actually we've had lots of comments since, people saying, oh, did someone from Simple Minds just step into the room? But that's what it's like. It's because it's fretless bass. Tony never played that. I've been doing it for years and years. I think I copied Chris Cross from Ultravox to do that, and a few others. For me, it's one of the most my favourites in the album. Anyway,
it does have a Simple Minds vibe to it, I must admit. And I don't know, because we did that song before you even joined the band. It's just the way it came out, I guess. But the fretless bass does make a difference. And we've also got a fretless bass player.
Yes,
he has no frets.
Okay, After the Flood, and the clip that we just played, the YouTube clip, it was interesting that Bruce and Derek were talking about the song, and they were talking about the Simple Minds comparisons to this song. And Bruce pretty much says, yeah, it does sound very like, much like Simple Minds. And when I saw that and heard that the first time, I was surprised at that, because it didn't hit me that way. And I'm a marginal fan of Simple Minds. I mean, I can take them or leave them in a lot of respects. There are some albums that they've done. Ironically, the stuff with Derek, I believe he played on Sparkle in the Rain, which is probably one of my favorite Simple Minds albums, a great album. It came out in 84, so he probably would have played on that.
Yeah.
But anyway, I go back and forth with them, but I'm certainly familiar enough with them where I feel like I would recognize that, and I didn't. But after they said that, I went back and I listened to this, and I thought, wow, yeah, they're right. It really does have a Simple Minds type of vibe to it. But one thing I posted on the main forum, somebody else brought this up, and I said that I think it sounds like, if it does sound like Simple Minds, it's like Simple Minds with a shot of testosterone, because if there's one thing Jim Kerr has maybe been criticized for over the years, it's like not necessarily being the toughest type of guy. You know, he's just kind of when he was married to Chrissy Hynde, I just wonder how she treats
we know who wore the slippers in that family.
Yeah, the slippers. Yes, exactly. But anyway, no slight on Jim. He's great, but I just, you know, I can't see them doing a song that's as tough as this, I guess, is what I could say. I think there's so many great things about this song, and it really is, I think, the first. We haven't even talked about Derek Forbes yet on this album, and I think for the first couple of songs, as strong as and as good and as solid as Derek's bass playing has been, it really isn't anything that's going to necessarily make you stand up and say, oh, they've got a new bass player. Listen to this. I mean, he's playing great. Don't get me wrong. He's playing really well and clearly a very accomplished and musician, certainly on the level of Tony. I mean, he's an awesome bass player. And I'm not just judging him on those two songs, but on his other work, too, that I've heard. But I think this song is the first one that really stands out as Derek really making a name for himself on this album. And a lot of that has to do with what he says in that clip where he used a fretless bass on this song. And as was said, this is the first time that anyone in Big Country ever played on a fretless bass. And if you're not a musician type, a geek, and you don't necessarily know what difference it would mean or even what that is, basically the vertical lines on a guitar neck are called frets, as most people know. And using those on a bass, it kind of gives the bass, when you play a bass with frets on it, which 90% of them have, it gives the bass a more, whenever you hit a particular note on the bass, it gives it a more distinct, obvious sound. Whereas if you don't have those frets, it kind of gives the feeling of you're sort of sliding from note to note. It's almost a more, it's hard to really explain, but it's almost, the bass tone almost sounds like it's liquid, like you're moving through the water from note to note, whereas on a fretted bass, it's more like you're hitting each note separately. So there's definitely a different sound and a different feel to using a fretless bass, and it's also a lot harder to play because you really got to know where your fingers go, because frets also are good indicators of where you need to put your fingers. So you got to be pretty talented and knowledgeable to be able to handle a fretless anything as well as he does here. And it really gives this song, it probably contributes somewhat to that Simple Minds vibe, because I know they use that in a lot of their tunes too, but I think it really gives the song a lot of character. This is one of those songs that when those 30-second clips came out, when I heard the 30-second clip of this, it immediately hit me from the first second of it as something that was really going to be interesting. And it was something that I never really heard from Big Country before, a sound that I never really had heard from them before. It had almost a Middle Eastern type of feel to it. And I really couldn't wait to hear the full version. And I got to say, the wait, it was worth the wait, because this is one of my favorite tunes on the album. And I think, again, this is one of those perfect examples of how the band has established some new aspects of their sound while still maintaining some of that Big Country stuff that we know and love. And I think Mark's drums, especially on this, I mean, they hit there. That's what hits you immediately. And it's just such a great rhythm that he's playing here. Like, it's like nothing I've ever really heard from Big Country before. If it conjured images of anything else in the past, it might be an East of Eden type of vibe. The song doesn't sound anything like East of Eden, but that rhythm, that odd signature that he's playing in is really interesting, and for some reason evokes that song to me. We get an interesting moment from Mike at the beginning of this song where he says Shia as the song goes in. and you think, you know, is that off limits for him to say Cha or Shia? And I know Mike has probably used this before in his own stuff, and for the record, I don't think it is at all, and I think it's just a natural type of emotion that Big Country's music just conjures in you if you're singing it. It just makes you want to shout out those types of things. And when I heard it, I loved it, actually. I just thought it was a nice, whether it was intentional or just a subconscious thing that he just did, I thought it was a wonderful little nod to Stewart in the past, and it fit perfectly. And
yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it was spontaneous.
I probably feel that way too. I think that's probably what it was, because it certainly feels that way. But anyway, great things about this song. It's such a cool tune and an inventive tune, and there's so many cool elements to this. And when I talk about this being a headphones album, this is really the first really great indication of what I mean by that, because if you listen to this song in headphones, you hear so much great stuff going on. One of my favorite elements of the song are the little mandolin flourishes in this tune. Just really cool little mandolin parts that just add so much to the song. I love it. Holding back the trouble, waters are rising. And I'm assuming Jamie's playing those because he's credited with mandolin on this album. And great job on that. He's really become a very good mandolin player, as also evidenced on the stuff he did with Bruce, their solo stuff. But I love that. It's really odd to hear like a Middle Eastern sounding song with mandolin on it. I mean, it's just so cool. It's such a cool, inventive and interesting mesh of styles. I think that vocally too, it might be my favorite performance by Mike on the album vocally. I think he just sounds fantastic on this tune. I love the Under the Sky part, how he sings that. It just is a very driving part of the song and very emotional. It just gets you fired up. Just something about that portion, I just love it. Under the sky! This to me is one of those songs that really just surprised me when I heard it, as to how, not only how good it was, but how interesting and how brave of a song it was and how unique of a song it was. I mean, it really sounds like nothing the band would have done with when Stewart was in the band. But it certainly has big country elements to it, but it doesn't sound like anything that they would have done in the past era of big country. And I think that's one of the things that I respect so much about this album, is that, you know, that there are a few songs on here that are really throwbacks to the old big country sound, and unapologetically, I think, too. And I'm glad that they're on this album. But more often than not, you get songs like this, which are really, that really show the guys trying to do something. And I don't even think they're necessarily trying to. It's just coming out this way, and they're letting themselves be creative.
Yeah.
And it's exactly like what Bruce said when we interviewed him in episode 10, and he said, we're not going to sit around trying to contrive this album. We're just going to do what we think we want to do, and whatever comes out, that's what comes out. And you can see that's what's happening here. So it's one of those songs that, as you said earlier, it makes me proud of this album and proud of Big Country and what they've accomplished, because it really is such a cool song and such a different song, and it takes the sound in a really interesting new direction. And I think they can build a lot off of this feature too. So I think this is just a tremendous song. One other thing I do want to mention that I almost forgot about that's so cool in that Rivers Are Rising part is in the background vocals. And this is another thing that you really get to hear more if you listen to it in headphones. But when Mike is singing Rising, the Rivers Are Rising, it sounds like Mark Brzezicki in the background more than anyone else singing the background parts. And they're singing the word rising, and they sing it in a minor key. And I don't want to like jump into too much musician speak here or whatever, but they sing it in a minor key, and it's not really what your ear is expecting to hear necessarily, because the song is more in a major key, especially that portion. But they sing this background part in a minor key, and it's so cool. And they just do it once, and it's so cool. And I love that. I love that they just did that one awesomely cool little thing, and they did it just one time. And it took the song, and just for just that moment, it took the song in this whole different direction. It's those kind of moments throughout this album that really surprise me and really make me a believer in this lineup and in what they're doing. And I think this is one of the standout tracks.
Yeah, definitely. This was one I took to immediately as well. I think In a Broken Promised Land and After the Flood were the two songs I latched onto initially very strongly. Those two were my favorites, and it's still one of my favorites. And the interesting thing, like you sort of touched on, this must be one of the newer songs in the album because it has no Tony Butler writing credit, but Derek is on it. And that's interesting because this is one of the songs that points away from the past and into other types of influences. So with that being one of their later things that they come up with? Does that point the direction, or is it just a happy accident? I mean, time will show, but it's an interesting thing to notice. So one thing I expected you to say, but you didn't say it, is about the opening rhythm. I definitely hear River of Hope. It's very similar to River of Hope, pretty much the same rhythm. So
it's more staccato-y, I think, whereas River of Hope is just like a constant driving force of nature. This is like more like stuttering and start and stop type of feel to me.
It's not a carbon copy for sure, but it definitely has some of the same thing going. I think once you hear it, you can't unhear it. So I always think of it. And also about the Simple Mind comparisons. Like yourself, I was one of those who said, really? When I heard that, I don't hear it. But I don't know if I'm too familiar with them. I mostly heard stuff from after Derek left the band. So out of curiosity, if anyone hears this, I'd love to see some examples. I just like to know, because I guess I'm not in the know enough to see it. You know, I checked with my wife, who's much more of a fan, and she said, well, could it be Waterfront? And then we played it, and I said, no, not really. But maybe it's like you said, with a shot in the arm, it could be something like it. I hear some other influences, though, and I know that this is not a cool name to throw around, but I hear some Gary Glitter-esque rhythm things going on here. He just has so many songs that start with the same kind of rhythm and guitar thingies. It's not about, certainly not like those songs, but there's something about the style. Start with the rhythm, you go into a guitar thing, and Gary Glitter just seems to have that rhythm starting in a lot of songs. And I was just reminded of it. I'm not going to say they sound like Gary Glitter, for God's sake. But,
right.
But
what hits me when you play those tracks, too, that I think of is the Hey, 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 because this song does have a really cool little part where they do a little Hey chant. So that kind of lends back to the Gary Glitter stuff, too.
Good Lord. Yeah. Part of me hate to bring it up, but I did hear it. It was definitely something there.
Well, I remember the track Driving to Damascus was reviewed with saying that it sounded Gary Glitter-esque at times too, and that was talked about that track. So believe it or not, I don't think this is the first time that Gary Glitter's name has been used in conjunction with Big Country.
All right. Yeah, so it is what it is, and it's only rock and roll. Of course, it's much more fun to recognize the feels of Fire Lick, which is also reused in this song. That's really nice. And it's like I've been saying all along, the success formula for the current band is one foot in the past and one foot in the future. And some songs have a stronger leaning on the past. This definitely has a stronger leaning on the future. But still, the fact that you can hear the feels of Fire Lick in there is nice. It makes
I never even thought about that until just now, and I was thinking, what is he talking about? And then I'm thinking of that lyric, and like, that part, and you're right, that is very Fields of Fire-esque, isn't it?
Yeah, so you said a lot of the things about this song already, so I'm not going to add too much more. But this is one of those where, again, I wish I had the lyric sheet. What's your take on the lyric?
Yeah, interesting. Well, this is certainly one that doesn't strike me as having anything to do with Stuart, so that's interesting.
Yeah.
These lyrics, you know, I'll be honest with you, I haven't given them a ton of thought yet. I haven't really sat and thought about it.
Right.
I probably should. And as you say, it's hard to do that without them printed out that you can read them and think about them. No, it's interesting. It seems to me to be a lot of that stream of consciousness type of lyric writing, where I'm more drawn to certain feelings that it evokes. For example, when he's singing about the rivers are rising and troubles rising, I don't know exactly how that relates to the context of the overall song, but there's just something about that the way it's performed and everything that works for me. But yeah, I really don't know. I don't have a clue at this point.
I'm asking you because I don't really know either. And I'm not going to sit here and speculate, I think, wasting everybody's time. But I'm definitely going to get into this. I'm sure lyrics will appear somewhere. I'm having a hard time making out half of the lyrics, at least.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking, after the flood, what could the flood be? You know, it's sort of an after the catastrophe kind of situation. I don't get a lot of feeling of disaster from the song, kind of like you do for the storm. There it's very impending and very ominous. And here it's more like a very funky and fun, strange song, and it's after the flood and rivers are rising, and I don't get that sort of ominous thing. I don't get it. But the lyrics might point that way. I don't know. I really don't know. But I'm interested. I would love to know. But this is one to revisit, I think, definitely. So how do you rank it?
This is my number two.
All right. This is my number four, and I love it.
Good.
Hi there, this is Christine, but many of you know me as CJ, and this is my review of The Journey. Based on some of the YouTube clips from Sterling and other gigs over the past couple of years, I really wasn't sure how I was going to respond to the new material. But I really like it, and I promise I'd tell you if I didn't. My favorite tune off the new album is definitely Home of the Brave. I cannot get enough of that one. I think I'm running it on a constant loop. And I'm really blown away by the gig footage of Derek's solo at the beginning of the song. So I hope he does that when they're in the States. I'm also really enjoying After the Flood, Last Ship Sail, Strong, In a Broken Promised Land, Winter Fire. And the big surprise for me is Hail and Farewell, which I really like. There are a couple of tunes that have grown on me over the past couple of weeks. I caught myself singing Hurt in the office the other day, and the guitar on The Journey is just seriously catchy. I'm not, however, a fan of the new intro to Another Country, which reminds me a little bit, no, it reminds me a lot of Mannheim Steamroller, I'm sorry. And I think I'm probably the only person who just can't get into Return, which I know will horrify many of you, as it does my dear friend Andy Inkster, who may well disown me after this public confessional. One of the things that I like the most about the new album is how cohesive it is. I think there's a lot of variety in the tracks. You get some post-punk, some classic rock, some anthemic rock, some ballads. But all of these songs really sound like they belong together. And it, for me, it provides that sort of old school, you know, album listening experience that I had as a kid. And that's one of those things you just don't get these days in a world that's driven by singles. So all in all, I think it's a solid album. I cannot wait to see the guys stateside. Stay alive.
Okay, that's going to do it for episode 18 of The Great Divide. Sorry we didn't get to more songs, but as you can hear, we are a couple of blowhards. But actually, you know, it was you guys, some of you guys, who actually made this episode longer, which we are really thankful for. You guys offered so many great contributions to us through the SpeakPipe page. And speaking for Svine and myself, I know that I can say that we both really appreciated that. And it's just been fantastic and fascinating to listen to all of you guys with your different accents from different parts of the world talking about Big Country, something that we can all agree on and that we all love. And at least agree on in general terms. We all have our favorite songs, our favorite albums, etc. But it's a great thing to have Big Country bringing so many people together again from so many different parts of the world. So thank you for all those contributions. It honestly really helps make what I think is a really great show to have everybody involved like this. So thank you for that. And we will be back hopefully soon next time with episode 19 and our continuing discussion of what we think is a great new Big Country album, The Journey. And what a great thing that is to say in 2013. So, sounds like you guys are all enjoying the shows. I just found out that the band is going to be playing 5 minutes from my house here in Virginia in June. So, I am super excited for that. I can't wait. So, the first time I've seen them since 1999. So, it's been a long time. So, with that, thanks again for listening. We really appreciate it. And we will see you next time. Bye.
Good God, you don't have to add the pathos.
The journey.